The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. Quite a few more clips as well to spice things up. I want to begin today by referring again. Hopefully, I'm not sounding like a broken record, but again, I want to refer you to America Under Attack and the booklet Great Again. Both of these books expose Satan's determined effort to bring down the United States. You see Satan's fingerprints all over what's happening today. Both of those books, by the way, they go back to Herbert Armstrong and something that he said in 1956. You talk about a prescient statement here. He's talking about the radical leftist communist plot against the United States. And as he brought out, and as my father has brought out since, in America Under Attack and Great Again, this is really coming from Satan the devil, this plot, this devious plot. Mr. Armstrong said in 56, it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. Now, when you look at the problems America is facing today, I mean, as I say, you see how spot on that forecast was. The nation just being sapped of its strength, perverted in its morality or immorality. The educational system completely sabotaged. The social structure just breaking down right in front of our eyes. Destroying our spiritual and religious life. And now, finally, the government. Overthrowing the government, bringing down the government, undermining the Constitution. And Great Again, my father, again, commenting on this quote from 56, he says, communists first corrupt, pollute, and agitate from within. That's where the attack is coming from. America Under Attack. The attack comes from within. It says, but their final phase is a violent overthrow of the government. They aim to destroy the system because they can't build another one until that happens. The communist attack from within America is far more significant than you may realize. He went on to say that we're staring at it face to face. This attack, it's going on. And it's more significant than you realize. Now, we don't realize how much this has impacted our society because it's, well, I mean, that quote I gave to you was from 1956. And this has played out over the course of decades. My father, of course, draws a lot of attention in both of those books to the Obama administration and all of his communist mentors. And no one seemed to have a problem with this in the political classes, certainly not in the mainstream media. No troubling associations there at all. Only thing that troubles the mainstream media is, well, as far as the last 24-hour news cycle goes, it's the Michael Cohen-Sean Hannity nexus. Hannity asked Cohen, who's a lawyer and he happens to represent the president of the United States as well. But Hannity asked lawyer evidently something about some real estate transactions, and he didn't disclose it. And he's a commentator. And he's on Fox. And he supports Trump. Barack Obama was mentored by Marxist professors, communist activists like Frank Marshall Davis, black liberation theologians like Jeremiah Wright, domestic terrorists like Bill Ayers, and anti-Semites like Rashid Khalili. But that's no cause for alarm. It certainly wasn't from between 2008 and 2016. And along the way, anything that might have been construed as alarming, they simply covered it up. Like the 2005 photo of Barack Obama and Louis Farrakhan just grinning ear to ear. This was a few years before he ran for president. And a photojournalist captured it. And then a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, someone from Congress, ordered that journalist to turn over that photo. This journalist was quoted as saying, "I gave the picture up at the time and basically swore secrecy." Never mind this collusion or this conflict of interest. He swore secrecy. The journalist told the politician or the politician's representative, "I won't tell anyone about this." It says after, this is quoting the journalist, after the presidential nomination was secured and all the way up until the inauguration, then for 8 years after he was president, it was kept under cover. Not a problem, though. I mean, it justified it. It was justified because, well, this is the way that the president or Barack Obama can become president. My father says in Great Again, it's stunning how much and how often the government of this land is exposed for being deceitful. We touched on this yesterday and the parallels between what's happening today and what happened in the Worldwide Church of God following the death of Herbert Armstrong. Everything revolves around deceit. My father said the ideological roots of the Obama administration were more radical than the public was led to believe. And it is certain that the devil used this fact to his advantage. He has used it. Again, it's important to be reminded of this so that you can understand what's going on today in today's news cycle, where you see the media relentlessly assaulting the Trump administration, going after anyone associated with the Trump administration, and now bringing up what they see as all of these conflicts of interest, collusion. I think it was Rush Limbaugh yesterday who said the radical left is the very definition of collusion. They're guilty of what they're accusing others of. So they're up in arms right now over the Michael Cohen, Sean Hannity talks. That's a conflict of interest, they say. But here again, these hypocrites, that's what they are. They're the very definition of conflict of interest. At least 30 members of the major media left their posts in the press from 2009 to 2016 to work for the Obama administration. 30. ABC News president Ben Sherwood, his sister, was the special assistant to Barack Obama. We've noted David Rhodes before. He's the brother of Ben Rhodes, Obama's deputy national security advisor. He was heading up CBS. Sherwood was heading up ABC. Both of them had, well, in the case of one, a sister, in the case of the other, a brother. right up close working with Obama. Jay Carney, he was one of the first Obama White House press secretaries, married to an ABC reporter. John Nolte at Breitbart yesterday, talking about this new Sean Hannity standard. He says it's a wonderful idea. Hey, is the media actually going to expose conflict of interest now? It's long past time for the media to pour sunshine on any and all potential conflicts of interest. And the timing could not be more perfect. Less than 24 hours before the creation of the Sean Hannity standard, former President Bill Clinton's very own press secretary, George Stephanopoulos, interviewed James Comey, the disgraced former chief of the FBI, about his decision not to prosecute Bill Clinton's wife, Hillary, over her countless email crimes. Naturally, neither ABC or Stephanopoulos bothered to disclose this, but thanks to the Sean Hannity standard, this will never happen again. He's got his tongue in cheek there throughout. Victor Davis Hanson had a more serious piece yesterday at the National Review. Colluders on the loose. I mean, they're just everywhere. Colluding, conflicts of interest. He notes how Hillary Clinton, the campaign, hired Christopher Steele, a Hillary supporter, hired him to dig up dirt on Donald Trump during the 2016 campaign, and how that, as part of that dossier, they paid cash. Steele paid cash to Russian sources for all of the scurrilous allegations against Trump. And then that dirt was later leaked to the press just weeks before the election. This was the insurance policy, remember? Peter Strzok mentioned that in his text to Lisa Page in August 2016. Look, I mean, there's no way he gets elected. Okay, there's no way this could happen, he texted, but I'm afraid that we can't take the risk. It's like an insurance policy. We've got to take out an insurance policy just to make sure. Hanson, in his piece, he says some sort of collusion likely occurred when the Obama DOJ and FBI sought FISA court requests to surveil Carter Page and indirectly, possibly many other members of the Trump campaign. On repeated occasions, they all made sure the FISA court judges were not apprised that the Steele dossier, the chief basis for these requests, was paid for by the Clinton campaign, that the dossier was not verified by the FBI, that the dossier was the source of media stories that in circular fashion were used to convince the FISA judges to grant the surveillance requests, and that the FBI had severed relations with Steele on the basis of his unreliability. He wasn't trustworthy, the FBI later found out. Such a collusion of silence was similar to James Comey's admission that he apprised President Trump. He said this just Sunday. He said it Sunday when he was interviewed by Bill Clinton's top advisor. Such a collusion of silence was similar to James Comey's admission that he apprised President Trump of every iota of lurid sexual gossip about him, except that his source was a dossier paid for by Hillary Clinton and written by a campaign operative hired to find dirt on Trump and who had been working with Comey's FBI to get FISA approval to spy on Trump's own aides. He left that bit out. So in both of these cases, the FBI going before the FISA judges and Comey going before the president, in both cases, they revealed all of the lurid gossip in the report, but not the fact that it was unverified, that it was a political hit job. But let's not get distracted. Sean Hannity had a conversation with Michael Cohen. And then he got on the air later to defend Michael Cohen. This is unethical. You think about those FISA court applications, all the people that you know of that signed it from the FBI. How many people were in on this? That's what Victor Davis Hanson is getting at here. How many people were involved in preparing it, presenting it for the judge, and all of them, in every case, every 3 months when they had to roll it over and get it approved again, in every case, they left out the fact. They left out the fact that it was funded, it was sponsored by Hillary Clinton. It was a political hit job. Even Comey, when he sat down with the president, he didn't tell him those details. He just told him about all the dirt. Victor Davis Hanson, he went on to say this in the National Review. Who set up the ruse in which an FBI director types up confidential notes of a meeting with the president and passes them to a friend to ensure a firewall conduit to the press to publish as a leak from an unidentified source to damage the reputation of the president? He's talking about the meetings that Comey had with President Trump before he was fired. Comey, as you know, he later on wrote down what was discussed in these meetings and then gave the memos over to his friend, who then leaked the information to the New York Times. Hanson says all that would require a degree of collusion to leak a classified FBI document that is so sensitive that House Intelligence Committee members with security clearances cannot see. They're still trying to get their hands on these memos. They're still trying to get the documents to be made public. Members of the House Intelligence Committee. Listen to this exchange between Congressman Trey Gowdy and Martha McCollum. This is, I think, the other day on Fox. Here's clip 7.
You have been trying, obviously, to get these memos, as we said, and the letter that Rod Rosenstein wrote back to you about why he can't turn them over quite yet is here. Let's put it up on the screen for folks at home to see. He said one or more of the memos, he's referring to the letters that James Comey wrote, may be related to our ongoing investigation. It may contain classified information and may report confidential presidential communications, so we have a legal duty to evaluate the consequences of providing access to them. What do you think about that, given the fact that James Comey said there was nothing classified in those memos?
I wish he had shared that advice with Jim Comey before he went on national television and recalled every conversation he's ever had with President Trump. So I don't want the drama. I want the documents. I've actually read them, Martha. I read them months ago, yeah, which is why I think it's really important that you get to see them and your viewers get to see them. Look, Comey's talking about them. He included it in a Senate testimony. He's talking a lot, yeah, about them. Well, everyone should know what exactly he memorialized after his conversations with the president.
He wrote it all down. He talked about it in his Senate testimony. He gave the information to his friend, the Columbia law professor, Daniel Rickman. We later learned that little tidbit of information. Rickman's the one that gave it to the New York Times. Comey has since been talking about the contents of the memos. And Rod Rosenstein won't give the memos to the House Intelligence Committee because they're too sensitive. They're confidential. Here they've been talked about all over the place. But the House Intelligence Committee, that's just trying to get the truth out there, they can't receive these memos. The Federalist, back in January, it says here, a review of FBI policies governing the handling of sensitive government documents suggest Comey violated FBI policy by leaking the memos, which were produced on government time using government equipment and directly related to his official government responsibilities. This is all according to Comey's own testimony last year. So he had these private, confidential discussions with the President of the United States, his boss, He wrote down the content of those discussions in memos after the fact. And then he decided to give them, four of them, I think, to his friend in New York, Senator Chuck Grassley. He serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said, if this is from that January article, if it's true that Professor Rickman, that's the friend at Columbia, if it's true that Professor Rickman had four of the seven memos, then in light of the fact that four of the seven memos the committee reviewed are classified, this is why they won't be handed over. There's a few that have reviewed it, including Trey Gowdy. They were just able to read it, and that's it. They couldn't take away copies, nothing. No one can see it. Four of the seven have been deemed classified. And so you can do the math. If Comey gave his friend four of seven, we don't know which four, but at least one of them is classified. At least one. It says here, it would appear that at least one memo, well, it makes that same point. Let me reverse back to the article. This is the Federalist. It says, the tactic of using attorney-client privilege. Okay, so here is this January article. Comey gives the information to his friend, Daniel Rickman. Rickman gives it to the New York Times. Comey later says, the reason why I did it this way is because, well, I wanted a special counsel. I wanted Trump to be investigated. I mean, I had to do it for the good of the country. And then when there's any kind of widening investigation that looks into what Comey did there, considering it's classified information, then guess what Rickman comes along and says? Well, hang on a second. I'm an attorney, don't you know? I did have some communications with Comey, but those are privileged communications. The Federalist said in January, the tactic of using attorney-client privilege to shield potentially illegal communications from law enforcement scrutiny is not a new one. During the FBI investigation of then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's potential mishandling of classified information, Cheryl Mills, one of Clinton's top government aides, she's one of Clinton's top government aides, she was instrumental in scrubbing the emails. And she also happens to be a lawyer, an attorney. Cheryl Mills, it says, one of Clinton's top government aides at the State Department, also claimed that she could not testify about her communications with Clinton on the matter because she was also serving as Clinton's personal attorney. So when journalists pressed this Rickman about, well, what did you talk about with Comey? How was it presented? Did you ask if it was classified or not? Whatever questions they might have asked, Rickman's response was, I have nothing to say about any of this. I have no response. This is private. This is privileged. Now, the FBI director who was working for the president, he can tell Rickman all about the confidential conversations that he had with the president. Rickman, further, can go and tell the New York Times. The New York Times can tell the world about it and say it came from an unidentified source. And then, as you see from that January article, when the ones who leaked it are asked to give an account of their own unethical behavior, well, they cry out, it's private. It's confidential. It's privileged. Hillary was protected by attorney-client privilege. Cheryl Mills was protected. Comey was protected. Rickman protected. Obama protected. You can go right down the line. Everyone's protected by attorney-client privilege, except for Donald Trump. In the case of his attorney, well, he's not a real attorney, don't you know? He's kind of the fixer. And he pays off people. So he doesn't count. We can raid his office. We can raid his safety deposit box. We can raid his house. We can take his computer. We can take his phones. We can take all of that. Here's the double standard. Victor Davis Hanson says, James Comey himself was quite a colluder. Somehow he managed to mislead Congress by assuring them that he had not written his assessment of Hillary Clinton before he interviewed her, and supposedly had not been the source of or approved leaks to the media. How many people were in on this? All these examples that Victor Davis Hanson gives in this piece. It's interesting when you just go back to, again, that interview went on and on Sunday, 5 hours of it. And Comey had a lot to say, not just about Trump, but also about Hillary Clinton. And so here he is with Bill Clinton's, one of Bill Clinton's top advisors, asking him about the decision that he made. He came out, remember, just to go through some of the details, he came out, when was it, June or July last year, he said, look, what she's done, it's sloppy, reckless. I don't know if he used the word reckless, but he basically said, she's guilty, but she's not guilty because she didn't intend to hurt anybody. It was just kind of, incompetence, how to work with technology. She wasn't good at that sort of thing. So the investigation's over. The FBI interview with her, I mean, that was just going through the motions. And then all these other emails, hundreds of thousands of them, I think, they're found on Anthony Weiner's laptop. And this is just a couple of weeks before the election. And so here's Comey, caught between a rock and a hard place. I touched on this yesterday. But here he is, and all of this information on Anthony Weiner's laptop, of all things. So he writes that short letter to Congress saying that they're resuming the investigation. They're looking into it again. And then he tried to come out later and say, still there's really nothing there. And so Stephanopoulos here in Sunday's interview, he's asking Comey about how that letter, I think it was 11 days before the election in November of 2016, how that impacted the final result of the election. Here's how that exchange went. This is clip one.
But at some level, wasn't the decision to reveal influenced by your assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to win and your concern that she wins? This comes out several weeks later, and then that's taken by her opponents as a sign that she's an illegitimate president.
It must have been. I don't remember consciously thinking about that, but it must have been. Because I was operating in a world where Hillary Clinton was going to beat Donald Trump. And so I'm sure that it was a factor. Like I said, I don't remember spelling it out, but it had to have been. That she's going to be elected president, and if I hide this from the American people, she'll be illegitimate the moment she's elected, the moment this comes out.
That's Stephanopoulos there asking him if his decision to talk about or rather continue the investigation, if it was influenced by the fact that, well, she's going to win anyway. And he said that it must have been. He said, yes. Yes, it was influenced by the fact that she was going to win. And so he tries to explain that if I didn't do this way, that she would have won, and then all these people, her opponents, would look on that election as fraudulent. So I went ahead and resumed the investigation. What he's saying there is that he did it to help her. He wanted to legitimize her presidency. He wanted her to be president. I played you those clips yesterday where he talked about how much he hated Donald Trump. He was dreading the next 4 years, clip nine.
And also I told him that I dread the next 4 years.
That's what Comey said to Obama in one of his final meetings. He dreaded it. Why? Well, I mean, I have some sense of the nature and the character of this guy. And it's bad. Let me tell you, he's morally unfit. Here is Jim Comey on Sunday admitting that he politicized an FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server. He politicized it. Aren't you saying, don't you, weren't you influenced? The fact that you resumed the investigation 11 days before the election, wasn't that decision in some way influenced by the fact that you knew she was going to win? Well, it must have been. It must have been. He was operating in a world where Hillary Clinton was going to win. And on November 8th, 2016, their world was rocked when Donald Trump won. And then they had to, well, they had to come up with a whole new strategy. And that's what we've been seeing play out since. Listen to, again, what he said regarding that time period, clip two.
Hillary Clinton's convinced that that letter defeated her. What do you say to her?
I hope not. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I sure hope not.
I sure hope not. I hope that it didn't influence the election in any way. Because, in truth, I'm just trying to help her. I wanted to make sure that upon her victory, no one could cast doubt upon that. This is why they didn't bring up or fight against the Russian meddling in the election. Here again. They were living in a world where Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so to come out full force and to actually do something about Russian meddling, they put the lid on it. They kept it quiet. Or in the case of Comey, he reopens the investigation. I mean, here's Anthony Weiner on his way to prison, and he's got 100,000 emails from Hillary Clinton. How did that happen? Well, it's clear in those 5 hours, he dreaded the presidency of Donald Trump, and he was doing everything that he could. He was doing everything he could to give Hillary Clinton a pass. Never mind what the Clinton team still says. I mean, they blame that letter from Comey 11 days before the election. They blame that and about a dozen other things as well for the loss. Victor Davis Hanson, in his piece, he refers to this guy, Justin Cooper. He's the one that set up the private server in Hillary's bathroom. And it says here, Justin Cooper testified that he had set up Hillary Clinton's private server and then used a hammer to destroy some of her mobile devices, leaving the FBI unable to acquire them during the investigation. Clinton's email server, the domain clintonemail.com, was registered to Cooper himself while Clinton was Secretary of State. How much collusion was necessary to coordinate destroying 30,000 emails, smashing hard drives, and finding the proper Washington counsel to ensure that the now quite incestuous FBI never charged the perpetrators with a federal crime? How much collusion is necessary here? Not just with the Clinton team, Cheryl Mills and her involvement, and then saying, oh, attorney-client privilege, I can't go there, can't talk. That's private. That's private. And then James Comey coming out in the summer of 2016 and saying, look, she was careless. It was negligence. But there was no intent. All it had to be was gross negligence for it to be a federal crime. But she got a pass, and he opened it up later because he was living in the world that Hillary Clinton is definitely going to win. Where, I mean, as Hanson says with the title of his article, you have colluders on the loose. They are everywhere. These individuals, like Limbaugh said yesterday, they're the very definition of collusion and conflicts of interest. Hanson says former Attorney General Loretta Lynch, she seems to be involved in all sorts of collusion. Given that there are more than 5,000 airports in the United States, two jets, one carrying the Attorney General, the other, the ex-president and spouse of a presidential candidate of the same shared party currently under investigation by Attorney General Lynch. And they met on the tarmac in Phoenix. And we don't know what was said in those planes. I don't know how big the staff was in each case, the pilots, the assistants, the staff. No leaks there. Nothing. Nothing. And the only thing that Lynch has said about it was that, well, we exchanged pleasantries. We talked about the kids and such. And then later she says, and we did talk about some current events, things like that. Nothing to investigate there. Nothing to turn up there. No conflict of interest there. But Sean Hannity, he asked Michael Cohen about some real estate investments. And that's what we're obsessing over this week. Hansen says, imagine the following possible ethical collusion. What if both ABC News and CBS News were now running mostly favorable news accounts about Donald Trump's administration, rather than the media's 90% on average negative coverage? And imagine that one of Donald Trump's chief advisors and a deputy national security advisor was the brother of the current CBS News president, while the sister of the ABC News president was another one of Trump's top national security and energy advisors. What would the media say of such apparent incestuousness that involved two-thirds of the network's nightly newscasts? Yet that is precisely the case of the Rhodes and Sherwood siblings during the Obama years. What if the situation was reversed? What if instead of 90% negative coverage, you had 90% positive coverage coming from the big networks? And you had all of these relatives at ABC, CBS, and everywhere else, close relatives of members of the Trump administration. You think the major media types would see anything wrong with that? Of course they would. They'd be screaming. They would be screaming. It says here, just to conclude the Hansen piece, the public for much of 2016 was not told that the chief investigator of the Clinton email scandal, Andrew McCabe, since cited for serial untruthfulness, that happened last week with the Inspector General's report on Friday, he's been cited for serial untruthfulness. He was the chief investigator of the Clinton email scandal. He's also married to a woman who was a political candidate who happened to receive $700,000 from Clinton-related campaign funding committees. But there's no conflict of interest anywhere there. There's no there, judging by the major media reporting on this. And as Hansen brings out, much of the American public didn't even know anything about this in 2016. I think it wasn't until late in the election cycle that it started to come out. And then McCabe tried to, well, he was looking out for himself. He wanted to go about trying to improve his reputation. And he did it. He did it through unethical means, as has since been brought out in the Inspector General's report. Another one. This is the last one. Victor Davis Hanson. He writes about Andrew Weissman. He's one of the top investigators on the Mueller team. He's investigating Trump. And so many of these investigators in the Mueller team, they're, like I said yesterday, they're big Democrat donors. Andrew Weissman, a Mueller investigator, had emailed applause to Obama DOJ holdover Sally Yates when she had tried to block the immigration moratorium issued by her boss, President Trump. President Trump's the boss. He gives Sally Yates an order. She defies him. And Andrew Weissman emails her applause. Good for you. Way to go. It says, like others on Mueller's team, Weissman was a donor to Democratic causes and an admitted Hillary Clinton partisan. And Sally Yates co-signed one of the FISA court requests to surveil Trump campaign associates. And she also did not disclose to the court the full provenance of the Steele dossier. And so on and on it goes, which makes the reaction that you've seen in the leftist media this week particularly hard to take because of the obvious, blatant double standard and the hypocrisy and the self-righteousness. You got to go back, as I said at the start, you got to go back to America Under Attack. You got to go back to great again to understand why this is happening. It's warfare. It's a kind of warfare that we don't really understand or know how to cope with. Every diabolical means is being used to weaken us from within. America's being sapped of its strength. Our educational system, our political system, our justice system, they're being sabotaged. And now the government, at every turn, from every angle, is being attacked. The White House, the administration, the presidential administration, it's all coming under attack. All of this, I mean, this attack from within, as my father says in Great Again, is far more significant than you realize. Make sure, if you haven't gotten the message from the programs we've put together this week, these would be some excellent books to review, America Under Attack and Great Again. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
So they were living or operating in a world where Hillary Clinton was going to win. And as I said in the first segment, when that didn't happen on November 8th, they had to rapidly come in with a different strategy, a different plan. I mean, it's still aimed at defeating Donald Trump. And they didn't do it at the election. So now they're trying to do it with investigations, with attacking him in the media, 90% negative coverage, impeachment, going after those close to him. And so they used the Russian meddling, among other things, and they turned that on Trump. All of a sudden, Trump is to blame. He's the one that's not going after the Russians, not Obama. And then the spying that was meant to prevent him from getting elected, now it expanded to just go after the Trump transition team, anyone and everyone associated with Trump, through Carter Page, through Paul Manafort. And then as you come up closer to the inauguration in January of 2017, you have the Obama administration scurrying in its last days to vastly expand the NSA's ability to share information with all the other intelligence agencies, something like 16 of them. They were scurrying. March 1st, 2017. This is the New York Times. This is just a little over a year ago. The New York Times says, in the Obama administration's last days, some White House officials scrambled. They scrambled to spread information about Russian efforts to undermine the presidential election and about possible contacts between associates of President-elect Donald J. Trump and the Russians across the government. It says former American officials say they had two aims: to ensure that such meddling isn't duplicated in the future, and to leave a clear trail of intelligence for government investigators. That's what the major media was reporting until they realized, uh-oh, we may have let the cat out of the bag. We may have revealed the deep state. We may have exposed ourselves, the Obama administration, for all of these misdeeds, the spying, the abuse of power. Right around that same time, in March, I think this was March 2nd, 2017, Evelyn Farkas, she was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Obama. And here again, she was a holdover for those first few months, those transition months. And listen to what she admitted. This was on MSNBC, March 2nd, 2017, clip three.
Well, I was urging my former colleagues and frankly speaking, the people on the Hill. Mm-hmm. It was more actually aimed at telling the Hill people, get as much information as you can, get as much intelligence as you can before President Obama leaves the administration, because I had a fear that somehow that information would disappear with the senior people who left. So it would be hidden away in the bureaucracy, that the Trump folks, if they found out how we knew what we knew about the Trump staff's dealing with Russians, that they would try to compromise those sources and methods, meaning we would no longer have access to that intelligence. So I became very worried because not enough was coming out into the open, and I knew that there was more. We have very good intelligence on Russia. So then I had talked to some of my former colleagues, and I knew that they were trying to also help get information to the Hill.
There it is. I mean, she's basically... She's admitting, I was there during that transition period. I was there telling members of the intelligence community, as well as Democrats in Congress. See, they're all working together. We've got to gather as much information, not just on Russia, on Trump. She was worried that if they found out how we knew what we knew about their staff, the Trump staff, we were worried that they would, compromise those sources. So they ramped up the investigations, the illegal investigations on the Trump administration or the incoming administration, and then set up all of these policies on the way out to expand NSA power, to expand the National Security Agency's ability to share information. It had to be shared across the board from one intelligence agency to the next so that they can all go after him. Just last week, Mark Meadows, he's the Freedom Caucus leader there in the House of Representatives. He's a Republican from North Carolina, and he was on, again, you go back to March, just to reiterate some of the things we've said over the last 2 days, but you go back to March, and there were those besides, I mean, the president himself, of course, tweeted out, you know, the Obama administration, it wiretapped me at Trump Tower. And then the outcry, we should have looked for a montage, Sam. All of the major media just, absolutely beside themselves What a kook. I mean, what a conspiracy theory. How crazy is it to think that you're being wiretapped, to think that they're investigating members of your administration? And you've heard the clips already this week of Jim Comey and James Clapper and Michael Hayden, all these individuals saying it never happened, it's not going on. And then lo and behold, we find out later in the year, it absolutely was going on. But then they defend it now by saying, well, I mean, there was an investigation going on, but certainly it wasn't Obama. I mean, the Obama administration didn't have anything to do with it. I mean, this is just the FBI and the DOJ doing their jobs. This is Mark Meadows on a radio program last week, talking about the Obama DOJ, the Obama White House, and its efforts to spy on Donald Trump. Here's clip four.
Perhaps we're breaking the news right here with you, but I can tell you that there are a number of redactions that are being made on critical documents that would suggest that not only the FBI and DOJ didn't have a blindfold on when it came to actually looking at acquitting Hillary Clinton and investigating Donald Trump. But we now see that the State Department, and it appears that the White House at the very highest levels, including the president himself, were involved in this whole narrative of investigating Donald Trump. And much of that started with a fake dossier that was put together by a Democratic opposition research firm, as we now know, Fusion GPS, that was paid $12 million to come up with this dirt that would suggest that the FBI and DOJ could surveil Donald Trump and spy on an American citizen. So it's just not... It's not the way that we normally think of our FBI and DOJ officials. In fact, the vast majority of them are great patriots serving their country. But there are a few people at the top that really justice needs to be meted out for them.
Yeah, the ones at the top. I mean, this doesn't mean the tens of thousands of agents all over the nation are left-wing radicals. But the top two at the FBI... at the time, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, and then over at the DOJ, Loretta Lynch, the Obama White House, the highest levels, including the president himself, were involved in this whole narrative in investigating Donald Trump. They had the blindfold on when it comes to Hillary Clinton. But they were pulling out all the stops to go after Trump. The commentator asked Congressman Meadows, are you saying that President Obama was well aware of the Trump campaign being spied on? And here's what he said, clip five.
We believe that contrary to his public statements, that not only was President Obama aware, but certainly his chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, had a briefing on August the 12th of 2016. And then there was another briefing in September. The messages, the text messages that I've had the privilege of reviewing and some of the other correlating information would strongly suggest that there was not only information given to the White House, but indeed that they were involved in directing some of the actions of the Department of Justice and FBI in the fall of 2016. That's troubling when you see one president allowing their DOJ to get involved in a political campaign.
That is troubling. This is a congressman. This is not some far-right commentator on an obscure website. This is a congressman, and it's getting absolutely no coverage. No coverage. They're turning up evidence, briefings in August and September that strongly, and all these redactions, why redactions? Why are things being erased? I mean, we've got to get the truth out there. Why is it taking so long for the House committee to get the memos? Well, it's confidential. It's private. Everything's private. except for the communications Donald Trump has with his lawyer, with his administration, with his incoming team, all of that. I mean, we've got to listen into that, and we've got to leak it, and we've got to tell everybody about it because he's morally unfit. But here are these congressmen, precious few of them, turning up these facts, briefings in August, September. They were not only given the information that was going on, they were involved in drafting some of the actions. One final comment here from Congressman Meadows is clip six.
And everything's talking about Russia collusion. Most of the Russia collusion that I've seen at this point would indicate more of the Democrat Party paying for some of Russian intel more so than anything that aligns with Donald Trump.
And that's the truth. It's not to say that those on the right or those in the Republican Party are without any kind of faults whatsoever. But just like the radio host said yesterday, those on the Marxist left, the radical left, they're the very definition of collusion, of conflicts of interest. Go back and read Great Again and America Under Attack. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.